Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
At Boar's Head, we've been going back to school for over 115 years. And this year, every school lunch is reason to celebrate with the flavors your kids love and the exceptional quality you expect. Helping you make school lunch fresh, easy, and delicious. Ring the bell. The deli is open. Boar's Head, committed to craft since 1905.
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Bar, episode 386. Jeff Lowe, Ken Jack, Trill Ballins coming at you on a Sunday, nearing the end of August.
Not a very sunny day.
Oh, it depends. Yeah, I'm in Texas. It's very hot, and I'm flying into a tropical storm tonight. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, it's pouring rain here. It's disgusting.
Yeah. Sounds absolutely fantastic. Can't wait to fly into that beautiful thing. We got Reminiscence movie on HBO Max. And then we're going to do a coolest dudes draft because, you know, the cool dude, Hugh Jackman.
Jeff, did you swallow sandpaper last night?
I have no voice to begin with because I've had an allergic cough for 2 weeks. And now on top of that, I was at a wedding and I was out all weekend. So I just don't have a voice. So it's going to sound really, okay. Really raspy today.
That's okay, man. You sound like a good lounge singer voice.
Minus the talent of a lounge singer.
Well, you know, lounge singing is one of those things that is you love to see it in movies.
How about this? Could you imagine if you played the piano for somebody and their compliment to you is they're like, oh, you sound like a Nordstrom piano player. Like the guy that plays the piano in some Nordstrom.
I don't feel like I've been in a Nordstrom with a piano player since like 2005.
But okay, that's fair. They may have stopped doing that 15 years ago. That's incredible.
Von Maur still does that though. If you've ever been in a Von Maur. Or know what a Von Maur is? Do you know what a Von Maur is?
I actually don't.
Like it's an upscaler department store compared to a Macy's, but it's not quite at like Nordstrom levels of what I would consider to be purchasing. What's your favorite mall store? Like your specialty store, not your anchor store.
I think for me, specialty is different, obviously. Like Anchor, H&M is a store I go to the mall for a lot. But that's not like a specialty store, I feel like, you know? So like, I don't think that applies.
Well, H&M really popped and they're like everywhere. I remember 2006, there was only, if you wanted to go to H&M, you had to go to Michigan Avenue in Chicago. But now H&M is they're in lifestyle centers and stuff.
Yeah, that's true. So yeah, that's what I'm saying is like, I guess it doesn't really apply in this scenario. So I don't know what the specialty would be. Like there's not many oftentimes where I'm just like, damn, I really need that, you know, Green Bay Packers spatula from the kiosk down at Westfield Mall. You know what I mean? Like that doesn't pop up too often.
Yeah. I'm a Finish Line guy. I like the Foot Locker, but the Finish Lines are usually like larger format, usually like more square footage in there and have a bigger selection of shoes. So I like all those, especially because they have like the Nike Vapor Max or whatever. I wish I'd bring back the annual Air Max. Mm-hmm. Is what I wish would happen because I missed those. Now it's the Vapor Max, and those look a little too futuristic for me.
Is it Finish Line where they like try to sell you stuff in it?
Yeah, it's a store.
Well, no, I mean they pitch you stuff. You know what I mean? Like you don't go there. Like they aggressively say, like, "Hey, buy this product. Hey, buy this product." Mm-hmm. Like to get commission.
I've never experienced that. And in fact, it's usually been the opposite in a Finish Line where it's like, there's like one person working the floor and they're overworked and they obviously need support, but they're doing their best to keep up. That's how it is in a lot of retail situations, you know, lately. It's you got to have a little more patience with, you know, people working service industry jobs and retail jobs these days. Cause they're getting like, I think the treatment has been pretty poor as people have kind of come back out of the pandemic.
Yeah, it's all the skeleton crews. People still not being paid well. But there was definitely a shoe store in the mall that I would go to where I guess they must have earned commission because they would like try and pitch you different products for your shoes. Like, hey, you should definitely buy this shoe cleaner thing. Hey, you should buy this shoe smell thing and all these other things like that. It was like GNC for shoes.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, Finish Line may do that when you get to checkout. I think some of the other like Champs, I have had that happen to me at Champs. It's like the shoe cleaning product. And I'm a get my shoes dirty kind of guy. I don't clean sneakers. I like beat up dirty sneakers. So, you know, to each their own.
I, at a wedding this week, at a wedding this weekend, the pastor marrying the couple, nice person, nothing bad to say about it, except for this one thing. He was noting how the groom, they were like talking about like things that they could do since the last year since they had like a stripped down wedding, like COVID wedding. And he goes, oh, you know, and he still likes anime. We'll check back in on it next year, see if he's grown up. And I was like, whoa.
I would have been like, excuse me, Mr. Pastor. Let me talk to you about Evangelion and all the religious elements in there, and maybe I can convert you on my side.
Exactly. The staff of Longinus, the mother and father, he would have really dug it.
I turned to my friend. I was like, what the fuck is that? I was like, all right. Okay, little joke. It's like a little joke. He brings it up minutes later again. He goes, you know, and again, he goes, we'll see if you grow up and stop watching anime. It's like, all right, buddy, like, what are we doing here? Like, what is this? Like, who are you? What's this like assault on big anime you're doing at this in the middle of the wedding here? Just roasted them left and right. I just had to say something.
I don't know if I've been to a single wedding where anime has been mentioned
so ever.
That's new for me.
There would have been something there would have been a special moment at a Texas wedding where on a ranch where anime gets brought up, and then me in the back dressed like one of the characters from Night at the Roxbury with a blue suit, black t-shirt and gold chain stands up and says, hey, fuck you, man.
It would have been funny if you dressed rules. As an anime character instead, like you were dressed, if he was dressed like the girl from Kill la Kill,
or if you got up and you pretended to go Super Saiyan and then you did a backflip off of a wall.
Yep. I actually saw a clip on TikTok. Some guy, he's an anime fan. He got married, and like for his bachelor party, they brought him to like some big giant like anime collector store and everything. And they all dressed up like Naruto characters. And like for a second, you stop and think, just because like instinctually, you're like, oh, this is nerdy. But then I'm watching it. I'm like, these guys are having so much fun. Like, I wish I could be these guys right now, because they were having more genuine joy than I think I've ever had in my life.
And I know this is going to make people mad, but like, to me, there's no difference between that and like, let's say two people are getting married and they went to the same college, and sometimes we'll get the mascot to show up. There's no difference between that and that mascot thing for me, except one is like more, you know, like here I go again, defending anime at weddings. You just can't have a wedding these days without people wondering if Goku is there.
What mascot would you want at your potential wedding? Would you have wanted to have like just a big ass drum?
You mean like a Purdue specific mascot?
Yeah.
No, I'd want, there's like an inflatable, I forget what its name is. So there's like Purdue Pete. Then there's the Boilermaker Express special. I forget. It's been so long since I've even thought about it. And then there's this inflatable baby. Or it's like let me look. It's like
I know what you're talking about.
Purdue inflatable. It had a name. His name is Rowdy, I think.
Purdue Rowdy. I really hope this doesn't disappoint. Oh no, yeah, no. You'd want that there?
I think that is the most, so like I personally find Purdue Pete to be kind of horrifying.
I don't think you're alone in that opinion.
I think Rowdy looks friendly, and I always like that thing where the person in those inflatable suits like flips upside down, and so it looks like they're walking on their head.
And that is very cool.
That trick is a certified crowd pleaser.
That's true. I don't know what I would want. The good thing about Manhattan is that their mascot's already kind of a priest, so it works out. I don't need it.
What if you had a Bobby Knight cosplayer throw a chair across the dance floor.
A Bobby Knight themed bachelor's party would be, that has to exist.
A Bobby Knight themed bachelor party. What's up, Knight?
Probably write some for that.
We got to get in the news. We got a big trailer to talk about. It's brought to you in part by 3Chi. That's right. 3Chi. go to 3g.com, number 3, chi.com, shop for Delta 8 vapes, gummies, tinctures, oils can be used to make homemade edibles or one of their edibles, brownies, Rice Krispie treats, cookies, delicious stuff, just good tasty treats, and much more than that. Use code CAMERA, C-A-M-E-R-A, at checkout to get 5% off your order. 3G, it's the industry leader, Delta 8 THC products, all formulated by a biochemist made in USA, USA grown hemp, all that good stuff. And it's a federally legal version of THC. More functional alternative to marijuana as well. Great buzz, great body feel, clear head, less anxiety and paranoia. It's available online at 3G, number 3CHI.com, and at retailers around the country. You'll be 21 to purchase, but it's fantastic stuff. And remember, it's not CBD. Psychoactive. It'll give you a buzz. You'll definitely get a buzz. So use it responsibly. 3G, number 3CHI.com. Shop for Delta 8 vapes, gummies, tinctures, oils, and their own edibles. You can make your own, but buy theirs. Like, they're probably better at you than doing it. Use code CAMERA, C-A-M-E-R-A, at checkout to 5% off your order from 3G. All right. News. Eternals. New trailer. Honestly, they call it the final trailer. This felt like the first trailer. And I don't mean this felt like it was like the first trailer. This means like, I mean, like the first trailer was beyond the teaser compared to this. Like the context here, it felt like a whole different movie that was being teased. And I'll tell you what, it dropped at 3 o'clock in the morning and I just happened to be up doing something and I was stunned. I watched like 3 or 4 times in the morning. Awesome. Awesome trailer. We'll get into a couple of the things that are in here, but I wasn't on the fence about it. Like, you bring in Chloe Zhao, you bring in a big director, big names, but this has me amped as opposed to where before I was like, okay, looking forward to it. Now I'm pretty pumped for Eternals.
It's kind of funny how with the DC movies, we were always like, maybe they should try a lighter tone. And when they do that, we enjoy it. But then with the Marvel movies, it's like, maybe they should like try a little more serious of a tone. And then I think this Eternals trailer like had that. And I enjoyed that too. It seemed a little more intense than what you'd expect from a standard Marvel movie, right? Like you just didn't have like any of the comedic beats, or it seemed more like serious, I guess, is the way I'm trying to describe it.
Yeah, the first trailer was basically just Gemma Chan saying like, was it like, oh, humanity, we got to protect them, blah, blah, blah. Well, what was it? Beautiful World, Beautiful Something was playing in the background, like the stylized version. This one, just, they gave you so much more context, like you were saying. You saw a lot of, like, they feel like they did a good job of explaining right off the bat the whole bit that everyone was getting mad about, like, hey, where were they during the whole Thanos thing? They immediately just kind of squashed it off the bat, saying like, hey, look, they're ordered not to, blah, 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 blah. We see, look at the Celestials, which looks sick. You look at Kor, a couple other people in there, and we get to see the powers, and we get to see Kumail got all yoked as shit just to have finger guns, which is hilarious to me.
Yeah, he was there a line from him in the trailer? Or,
I think like one or two.
Yeah,
I think he had like one or two, nothing crazy.
Yeah, you know, the finger guns look cool. I like how they charged up on his hand, and then he did what you'd expect out of finger guns and just unleashed them.
Yeah, he did classic finger guns. Yeah,
classic finger guns.
And then Phaser Vision on Richard Madden looks sick too. The heat vision, or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, I thought this looked cool. This definitely got me more excited for the Eternals than the first trailer did, which is probably the intent of the way they designed this one.
Yeah.
There's rumors of a Thanos tie. There's been rumors that he'd be involved. They talk about the snap early on. They do also bring up, we see some Celestials. We've seen Celestials before in the MCU. First time we saw Celestials, and I'll read the names off, I'm probably not saying it right. Isom the Searcher, that was the one who had the Power Stone when Benicio del Toro, the Collector, was explaining Infinity Stones in Guardians of the Galaxy. You actually see him. He's just like mowing down wheat in a field, and it's a big Celestial just like destroying a planet with the Power Stone. Another Celestial is Nowhere. That's the big skull, which they visit in Guardians, cool. They visit in Avengers Infinity War. That was a Celestial at one point. Ego, the Living Planet, was a Celestial. So Kurt Russell's character from Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. And then you see two new ones in this one. Jemiah the Analyzer, which is the green one. He's like doing like that orb thing where he's kind of
looking at Kamehameha with the galaxy.
Yeah. And then Arishem the Judge, which seems to be the main villain, or I guess I would assume a large tie-in to the villain in this movie. There's a couple teases for villains, and we'll get into it as we continue to talk about the movie. But that's another Celestial that is who they say they answer to, it seems, via the trailer. I don't know the comeback story all that much, but it's clear that Celestials, as we know, because the first ever teaser image we got in this movie was Celestials. They're going to play a major, major role in this. And I imagine gods will as well, and Titans, and you'll see, I'm sure you'll see Thanos or whoever in relation to Thanos as well. But the other small tease we got is that many believe we see the fall of Atlantis. There's kind of like a city or a country or a nation falling into a like a wave pool, like just sinking into the ocean. People are seeming to suggest that that would mean that's Atlantis, the fall of Atlantis. That'll be teased, which that seems to be a tie-in to the next Black Panther movie, Wakanda Forever, because we know Namor is going to be a character in that movie as well. And that's been teased. That was teased in Avengers Endgame. They talked about it a little bit. They did a slight tease. So there's a lot of little tie-ins here. And I'm very curious how this connects larger to what happens now in the MCU, because this obviously is set post-snap, which they talk about literally in the trailer. So pretty cool. I mean, I love seeing just not just a new character, but many different new characters. That was like kind of the nice thing about Shang-Chi, right, Kenjack? It's like you just see, you know, like we had Black Widow and that was great. We had Spider-Man after Endgame. And now it's like you're seeing like truly new, fresh characters, not just like one or two, like all of them. Like they're all fresh for the most part.
Mm-hmm. Very, very cool.
Yeah, so good looking trailer. Comes out a little later on in the year. They claim that it won't hit streaming at all. Arrives November 5th. I'm sure it's an option. As everyone anticipated, they plastered from Academy Award-winning director Chloe Zhao up on the screen, which I'm sure gave Kevin Feige quite the delight to be able to do that. So we also saw Kit Harington a little bit here, very briefly. Very briefly, Kit Harington.
Like a car getting crushed over his head or something? Yeah, just for a second.
Yeah, yeah, very, very briefly, Kit Harington. It seems like Brian Tyree Henry is actually going to be the main comedic relief in this. And actually had a couple pretty funny lines in it. So, yeah, we'll see. Cool trailer, though. I again, 3:30 in the morning. It was quite the shock, but a big one. Now it paves the way for one more Marvel trailer in terms of movies, and that's Spider-Man, which we still don't really know yet. Another trailer was the trailer for the impeachment show. About the scandal, the Lewinsky scandal, from Ryan Murphy. This is the third, right? Am I missing one? This is the third.
It's OJ Versace and then impeachment.
OJ Versace and this. So now this is the first real trailer. We got to look at everybody, which they all look pretty solid. Seeing Bill Clinton is a bizarre thing. I don't know why. And whenever you see someone like a president or someone of that nature, though closeness doesn't matter a ton, obviously, because Cuba Gooding Jr. looked nothing like O.J. Simpson, though a bunch of the other ones did. So this is this. I don't know. This will test the theory of Trill. I know people like Versace, but Trill's theory that Ryan Murphy things just typically don't last past one iteration.
Ryan Murphy's had a rough go at it with his Netflix shows. So he signed that big deal, and I don't think. Well, but he had that one series with the Hollywood show.
Well, oh, yeah. That one was not very good.
Yeah, and then I think there was like another limited series he did on Netflix. Oh, the what was the one with Sarah Paulson? I know that's not really weeding down the Ryan Murphy shows. The Nurse Ratched.
Nurse Ratched, yeah.
Ratched, which was okay. But I think generally these anthologies kind of play into his strengths, because my theory is like he's always able to deliver one fantastic season of a show, and then it kind of just, you know, it wobbles from there. Whereas like the anthologies, I think like American Horror Story's gone downhill, but I still think people like them. And then these American Crime Stories probably go the same way. Like I didn't like the Versace one as much, but how much of that was tied into the fact that like OJ was a story that basically like formed, I mean, it was like a formative news item for when I was 10 years old. Like that was the only thing people really talked about in the news for like 4 years. And the impeachment, the Clinton impeachment thing is very similar, right? Because that defined 1999 to 2000, pretty much 1999. but around that time frame. So I thought all the characters looked good. It's just going to be really interesting because you never know. Sometimes I think what I really worry about is I just worry about like how much they're going to focus on like Clive Owen's portrayal of like Bill Clinton. Like I'd rather this be like focused around like Linda Tripp and the Lewinsky relationship, but then also like maybe go into a little more of like, I don't know if it will like go in a little more to like the media and how the media was kind of just, there's the Matt Drudge character, right? Like the Billy Eichner and the, you know, the Drudge Report kind of made a name of itself from this, but then the whole media like infrastructure around it. Like I remember Jay Leno, you know, he's making jokes every night about it in the same way with the OJ thing. It was a definitive story. I think that's probably the more interesting lens to look at this through. I don't know how much of that is going to touch on it rather than just focusing on the characters themselves, but I think by default, like it's interesting. Like Ryan Murphy, say what you want about him, but like he does make casting decisions that intrigue you and get you to watch the show. Like it gets you in the door, right?
That's what you said when they cast James Corden in The Prom. I remember you saying that exact thing, which is a stinker.
It's also worth noting too, just a good reminder that Monica Lewinsky, and this actually the other day, Beanie Feldstein, who's playing her, said that she had a say in every part of the script.
That's good.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that's where it's worth reevaluating. Cause I mean, even back to that, like what that Kid Rock clip they had in that Woodstock documentary, yeah, where it was just like, that wasn't just Kid Rock. Like that was kind of like the media approach to it. That was the narrative that was built, I think. And it's worth reevaluating, especially in the prior years since Monica Lewinsky, you know, she's come out and she's written some really good pieces about her experience. And I think like seeing 20 years later, seeing a show produced through those lenses is probably the deconstruction of this that it deserves. Now, I don't know how the nuance is going to be when you actually get to the show, but at least at least makes me excited to watch it.
I would be shooting for a balance from Richard Jewell, I would say, because I think that's something where everything was so face value, I think, for a lot of people, where you can at least get a little bit further into the weeds and be, like you were saying, kind of like give us a narrative that we haven't been presented with yet. Other than like, I feel like most people are nowadays, like they look back on that story and realize like, yeah, the media fucked with it. They weren't fair to Monica Lewinsky at all. But like, we don't know much beyond that. So like you said, interesting to see, I'm sure.
Well, I mean, going back to The Prom. Okay. I know you said James Corden, but like, Meryl Streep and Nicole Kidman are very interesting casting choices.
I like that you mentioned it, like casting choices. Like that's just funny to me. Like
I hope
everyone would ask for them.
I hope it works because I do like these. Like these are, and there are stories. I mean, the OJ one is obviously very hard to follow. Like that's, I mean, it legitimately doesn't get bigger than that. Some of the most monumental moments in American history, but like, there's a modern things like I'd love for them to retackle the 2000 election. Like I know they did that already on HBO, but recount. Oh my God. Like it's fun if you like elections, but Jesus, it's like, it's just not, doesn't hold up quite as well. And I think a Ryan Murphy text would be cool about that. So I know there was one that they almost did about Hurricane Katrina. I think that one got tabled. I hope it works because I want to see more of these because they are, I mean, the OJ one was incredible. It was one of my favorite things I've ever watched on TV. So we'll see where they go from there. Episode also brought to you in part by Allbirds. That's right. Ooh, very comfortable. Very comfortable shoes. Wore them the other day. More so worn at the wedding yesterday because I did not wear Allbirds to the wedding and my feet are just absolutely tarnished. Just brutal, brutal purchase. Did not pad well. But warmer weather, maybe coming around the corner, you're going to get a little colder weather. Guess what? Allbirds, they got shoes that fit all types of weather. And they're Tree Dashers, world's first performance running shoe made from premium natural materials that are also better for the planet, are excellent. Allbirds, we talk all the time about things that you can dress up, dress down, wear wherever. Allbirds completely fits that category. The Tree Dashers are insanely comfortable, like slipping your feet into clouds. Wonderful shoes. Bunch of different colors. Easy, soft, light feel. And again, you can do active things in them or just kind of show them off as a nicer shoe. Carbon footprint right on the shoe as well, so you know the impact on the planet. Allbirds also a B Corp, making the environment a stakeholder in their business. They know they can create a more sustainable future and all that stuff. So they're really hyping that up. So not only great shoes, great for the environment as well. A sustainable shoe, and it's a running shoe, and it's comfortable, built for performance, lasts really well, a long time. You can run hard and also, you know, tread lightly on the planet. So make sure this August, going into the fall, get those. Also, all their other shoes as well are absolutely outstanding. Allbirds, Allbirds.com. Allbirds shoes, premium. Thumbs up, Trill. You've owned Allbirds.
They feel so good when you go sockless in them.
Oh yeah.
I'll only not wear socks with Allbirds, and I'm not going to apologize for that.
You shouldn't. With winter too, get the wool.
I'm not gonna. Oh yeah. Are they gonna make a pair of like vegan leather ones? They should do that. You know.
That might be tough with no. Yeah.
Well, vegan leather is a real thing.
Yeah, it might be tough with no.
No socks.
With no sock, might get a little.
Well, they just put like wool on the inside. Just, you know.
Okay, yeah.
Make it like it just a tauntaun. Turns into
like an UGG, basically.
Yeah, it's just a tauntaun shoe where it's just like it's coarse on the outside, but on the inside it's comforting and warm.
On the inside, it's just guts. It's just like.
I always love the tauntaun scene because it's like George Lucas is like, well, I know a lot of kids are going to be watching this movie, but let's fucking horrify him for 5 years ago.
I mean, just gross guts. The tauntaun guts are disgusting.
It was that and the aliens, Bishop, I think it was the Bishop. Was he the android?
Oh, his milk blood.
He gets cut in half and he has the milk blood and the little like sensory balls dangling out of it. Where, yep. Like those were the two internal scenes I saw when I was a kid. And I'm like, no. scary.
A couple of their news items. There was have you guys seen the video yet of this? The train stunt for Mission Impossible 7.
Now that she's back in the atmosphere. Oh, not train.
Cool.
No, I haven't seen it. Did you send it?
All right, let's have you watch it live. Let's have you watch it live. This is a practical stunt for Mission Impossible 7. I love it.
Oh, that's pretty cool. I like the steam bellowing out of the train as it just plunges.
First of all, I was a lot. I mean, I guess I'm sure they prepped for it, but a lot less fire than I expected.
That'll be added in post. Yeah,
that's yeah. Post.
But awesome, just to see. I mean. That's the thing with this franchise is there's just a commitment to it's not just practical because everything's a commitment to practical nowadays. Right. But it's a commitment to just making it the most realistic, badass action you can possibly find. And so, look, they've done so many things. Time to throw a train off a cliff. Like, that's just simple. I mean, it's simple as that. Like, they're not like they're running out of ideas, but like you got to one up throwing the train off the cliff. I imagine he's going to be on that train in the movie as it goes off the cliff. Right. Where he bails out last second.
What if he's just on the ground? It's like the opening scene and he's just going for a walk on the beach and then the train just comes crashing down.
No, they're going to do Indiana Jones Crusader where like they're going to think he went off the cliff with the tank, but then he's going to like come up off the side.
Is the helicopter just filming or is that part? I mean, it's just filming. It's got to be just filming.
Yeah, it doesn't look cool.
And it's not a cool enough helicopter to be on Mission Impossible.
No, that's a filming one.
God, it's going to be, I cannot wait. I mean, the hype around this movie is going to be absolutely insanity.
There's that one clip that from like last year when they were filming this, where he was on top of a train and there was a car going at speed with the train and they're just like waving at Tom Cruise the entire time. I love that. No other, there's very few actors you're going to find that'll do that.
I think it's so cool that obviously Mission Impossible is based off of the TV show. Was it the 60s? Was it a 60s TV show? Seems like a 60s thing. And, you know, the franchise has spanned the decades so long that the theme song to MI2, I think, was a Limp Bizkit song. but now it's like kind of the gold standard in American action movie, just in terms of like raw enjoyability and what people crave. And I love that.
Mm-hmm.
Now I know why you want to hate me, because hate. It's all the world has even seen lately. And then they just do the Mission Impossible theme song.
They need an Imagine Dragons song back again, though. They do need that.
Well, like the evolution of dance, basically.
The Imagine Dragons was funny because like Limp Bizkit was commissioned for the song, whereas the Imagine Dragons was like, well, if we make this song sound enough like it, maybe they'll use it. And then they one.
It worked.
No Dune screeners. Denis Villeneuve will not be allowing them to send out screeners for Dune, which is not, it's, that's not, what's the word I'm looking for? Unusual. Like,
out of
care. Really, the pandemic is when you started to see a lot of screeners, like digital screeners sent. You still get them now and then for like big interviews. If like, like James Corden's not going to show up to the screeners that Ken Jack and I go to, you know, it's like, that's just not going to happen. Like these bigger late night hosts and like, so like they get them, but Denis Villeneuve put the kibosh on sending out digital screen. He doesn't want anyone to see it except on the big screen. And you know, I love the commitment.
It's absolutely meant to be watched on the big screen. The whole fucking, like, beyond, there's many movies like this, obviously, that have come out during COVID, but Dune, maybe more than any other one, is so built to be watched in a theater and not on somebody's MacBook, you know? I think it's a completely right thing to do.
Yeah, Dune's one of the few movies that I, you know, if I had the choice between streaming or the theaters, I can still go to the movie. It's just a lot harder having a kid. You got to schedule around it and all that. This is one where I'd pencil out the calendar. I say, like, let's get a babysitter. We got to go see Dune. So I'm excited for that.
Reminiscence, great movie to watch on a tiny, crusty MacBook Pro. Dune, not so much.
Reminiscence.
Reminisce about you. What's that rap song that does
Reminiscence,
that?
The movie. Starring,
is it a Nas song?
Hugh Jackman.
Yes, and Rebecca Ferguson again.
Yes.
And then last thing, this is disappointing. Bo Burnham not going to play Larry Bird anymore in the Adam McKay Lakers series. Scheduling conflict. I was literally just thinking about that the other day. But apparently scheduling conflict. I really wanted to see Bo Burnham play Larry Bird. It just seemed, it's just one of those castings that had me excited. I'm still excited for this series. I do think it's going to be really cool. But no Bo Burnham is a bit of a bummer. Now who do they cast?
Exactly. That was my next question. Was this who could play Larry Bird now?
Jim Gaffigan.
Owen Wilson.
He's too old. Well,
blonde yeah. Actors.
The height definitely helped for both. Like the height was definitely a big thing. I think they cast mostly taller people in these roles.
Yeah, I think so, right?
And Burnham being tall makes that, you know. So, I mean, look, there's always ways to get around it. Like Vin Diesel, I hate to break this to people, not that tall. Arnold Schwarzenegger, not that tall.
Wouldn't they just have a fully CGI Larry Bird?
Next to a real Magic Johnson actor.
And he's voiced by Larry Bird, but it's all like clips from previous interviews and press conferences. And they just splice him up, very naturally sounding.
Love that.
What's this thing called? What's the Adam McKay show called? Was it Showtime? Was that it? Or was that his pod? He had a podcast that was pretty good about basketball and...
I don't know what the name of the actual series is going to be. It's just it's untitled.
Hmm.
It's based off of Showtime, like the book. Yeah, John C. Reilly is Jerry Buss. Jason Clark is Jerry West.
So he's doing one of the Elizabeth Holmes movies. What was the who's doing the other one?
The other one was the Hulu series, right? With Kate McKinnon,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that might be one. I'm wondering if that happens. Like, you know, the same way like that everybody gobbled up the stories for the GameStop, and now it probably looks like they just will not do a GameStop movie because nobody gives a shit anymore. I wouldn't say that, but yeah. maybe they'll do one. It won't be like five GameStop stonk.
Oh, McKinnon got out of the project. That's right. That's right. And Amanda Seyfried is playing Elizabeth Holmes now.
In the Hulu one?
Yeah.
Okay, I really like that. I really like that cat. I mean, I like Kate McKinnon, but Amanda Seyfried, that's yeah. And we'll see. But I trust Adam McKay with this subject matter because I feel like he has obviously accomplished a lot, but his ability to just in The Big Short, point out like the seemingly surreal yet completely actually happened events that, you know, take place in our society.
I'm still searching for an actor that can't even. I looked up Larry Bird, actors that could play Larry Bird, and I got nothing. There is nothing here. Very unique looking dude.
Okay, I got one. Bear with me here. You know what? I'm gonna wait on on my insert of this actor's name into the podcast for that.
Yeah, I knew who you were going to say. I'm not going to say it yet.
Yeah, you guys were watching that movie and you knew that one character. I was going to say, you know who this character should have been played by? We'll get to that in the reminiscence review.
Well, let's just talk about reminiscence. Let's talk about the newest movie, the newest HBO Max and theaters release. Nicholas Bannister, a rugged and solitary veteran living in a near future Miami, flooded by rising seas, is an expert in a dangerous occupation. He offers clients a chance to relive any memory they desire. His life changes when he meets a mysterious young woman named May. What begins as a simple matter of lost and found becomes a passionate love affair. But when a different client's memories implicate May in a series of violent crimes, Bannister must delve through the dark world of the past to uncover the truth about the woman he fell for. Reminiscence, just over 2 hour long. I mean, it ain't a short.
Just over $2 million made the box office too.
Yeah, it ain't a short movie, I'll tell you that right now. Hugh Jackman, Rebecca Jarvis, Tandy Newton. This is a movie that I imagine most people didn't know existed, right? Like, this has to be one of the lesser promoted HBO Max simultaneous releases, right? Like, this just kind of popped up out of nowhere.
It got the pop-up on the main app screen, though. Like, it got the, this is a new release.
It's got Hugh Jackman. I would hope so.
Well, yeah. This was, what was the development history of this one like? Was this supposed to be a 2020 movie that got pushed back, or was this 2021 all the way?
I actually don't know if this was a delay. Let's take a look. Because most things didn't stay in their release window.
So filming began in October 21st, 2019. So who knows? You know, it probably was something maybe slated to come out late 2020, but it certainly wasn't one that they'd been holding on to.
April. I got delayed in April.
Okay. So you know, Lisa Joy is, I believe this is her debut, both in terms of directing and writing. And she had directed episodes and wrote and produced Westworld, which is a very good show. I think had a very strong first season, and I enjoyed the subsequent seasons, but not as much. And I really like Westworld. Now, I mentioned that because I think there are a lot of similarities between Westworld, maybe not necessarily. Oh, yeah. Like, I think just in terms of, I'll tell you what I liked about the movie.
We literally had somebody, I will say, to piggyback off of, then you can give a score. You can start it out. Somebody said on our Reddit, said the movie is an absolute mess. It was a mediocre episode of Westworld that stole ideas from Inception, but couldn't package it in an entertaining way. So it's a very solid brief recap of it.
So I think there's a general theme in the movie that I liked, and that's, you know, living in this future where things have become so bad that people only find solace in revisiting the past. And I think that, you know, as you grow older and kind of get more, you know, dopamine from nostalgia, basically. And I'm living through that right now, right? Because things that were in the 90s and early 2000s are becoming popular again. You kind of understand that. You kind of just want to curl into a ball and go back, and, you know, you don't want to face the future. You just want to experience the past again or live through memories. So I really like that general theme of the movie. And the other thing I thought that was done really well is I thought the world building, like the way Miami looked and kind of the divisions of Miami, one being the barons, I forget what they specifically called it, but it was their dammed off area. And then they're also like, what was the different like parts of
Elysium, you could say.
Yeah, they're Elysium. Like I like that. And, you know, I think Westworld has, I want to say similar themes, and I'm like not the smartest guy to break all this down, but I think there's an element of, you know, certainly like when you get into escapism and, you know, the involvement of people in Westworld typically, you know, being presented as, you know, folks who can afford this experience in Westworld, escaping to live this reality that they cannot otherwise get, whatever, you can go down all that. But I think thematically, like, I really enjoyed the, you know, the whole idea of like this memory machine and like what it could do. But I think where the movie really, I just didn't like it is I didn't like the noir detective stuff. And I don't think Hugh Jackman did a particularly good job in this role because I don't think he was overly miserable.
I think
enough.
He got it. I don't think he understood it.
I would argue, and we can go through his filmography, bottom three Hugh Jackman role I've ever seen. Like not good.
it just wasn't for him.
Wait, what do you give it, Trill?
You know, I'm gonna give it a 55. I didn't think it was bad by any means, but it wasn't. It wasn't an overall, like, there were enjoyable elements of the movie, like, and I found myself getting into it. But when it got to the last third of the movie, that's when I was kind of just like, even the twists and the turns weren't like necessarily shocking or whatever. They're just like, okay, this makes sense. Like it being a noir movie or whatever. But 55, like, look, I'm not giving it a 30 because I think the vision of Miami in this one and even New Orleans, like, I really enjoyed that. Like I thought like, you know, Lisa Joy and team did a really good job in terms of creating this world and creating something that seems like apocalyptic, yet people still have to live in it. And I don't want to like, I just want to highlight the positives I found in that, I guess.
Yeah, no, I think I agree with a lot of what you're saying. So I watched this on Friday while I was working. And while I was like half paying attention, I was like, oh, I kind of like this. The first twist where he like wakes up in the tube and you realize like he's been reliving his memories. I thought that was really interesting. But then it kind of, I feel like, goes off a cliff and becomes very, very boring. And yeah, I like that Westworld is brought up. Obviously, Lisa Joy did that too, like you were saying. But like, it just feels like it could take place in Westworld. Like this is part of the Westworld universe because like they have the same elements as far as like this future war that no one can explain that everyone was drafted into and like that influence on society and all that. And like, it felt like a poor amalgam of Westworld, of Inception and Altered Carbon. Because I rewatched this morning and like the more I'm watching it or paying attention to watching it, I really didn't like it because like, it made me want to go back and watch those properties instead of watching this because it was like a very poor imitation of what those movies and shows were able to do. And that to me was just frustrating. I thought Rebecca Ferguson wasn't particularly strong in this. I thought Thandie Newton probably the best out of this entire cast. Hugh Jackman, I think, was just kind of confused with this role. Maybe it wasn't for him. And they kind of needed to find a way to wrap up these storylines in a way that was just a little bit tighter. I would say like Clifton Collins, I think, was the bad guy in this. He's just not a great bad guy, I think, in general. The Baron storyline wasn't that great. Like it felt like it was trying to be too tech noir, like hard boiled detective-y. And like it became very tryhard. Like, and like the whole plot line of them walking around sunken undercity Miami. But of course, Hugh Jackman has to walk around with like his duster and like wool pants on. Like, dude, it's got to be a trillion degrees if global warming has wiped away Miami and New Orleans. Like, come on. But like, that's all for the sacrifice of the look. It felt like it was trying very, very hard and just not really delivering anything for all that effort.
Yeah. And a lot of that, look, you know, noir has been used a lot, you know, around these, you know, these neo-noir concepts, right? It's its own genre, basically. And I think it's a good, I mean, it's a classic framing for a lot of things that happen. And like, I particularly enjoy it, but what it comes down to is like, you really got to have that like lead detective, that miserable lead detective character you come to expect, like be miserable. And then also like deliver what you consider to be like clever lines of dialogue, even though they're not. And I thought like, even from the opening narration of Hugh Jackman, like what he was saying was just absolute nonsense. It's like time,
nothing.
Time is forward, but time is always backwards. And sometimes we get lost in forward time and go to backwards time. But that's when sideways time happens. And when the sideways time happens,
it's like
you got to watch out.
It was like when you spill something and on a counter and it just goes in many different directions, like, and you just can't keep up when you're cleaning it up. It's like they spilled a bunch of ideas and they just couldn't clean it all up into like one concise, like puddle. Like it felt like it was getting away from them. Like it was legitimately just getting away from them. And it was just like, I didn't know what it was. And the worst part, I'm like, I can't start. We don't say this very often, especially with big name people. And I can't even rack my brain to find a recent one. The acting wasn't good. Like it just wasn't like, it wasn't really intriguing enough. These are really good actors. Like Hugh Jackman, Rebecca Ferguson, Thandie Newton, like these are big name actors who typically put in, they weren't bad by any means, but it's tough when
you can't save a movie when like the main reason to go see it, like the names, especially Hugh Jackman, just can't really prop the movie up. I thought it was largely terrible. I gave it a 38. I think it looked very cool. I think the concept was neat, like surface level stuff. Like I'd love to see the concept art of this. Like the visuals were awesome. Like the panning shots, like the Miami, like it was neat.
Yeah.
But I mean, man, was this thing, it was like messy, and not messy in a way that it was just nonsense. Like it started off in a spot. I'm like, okay, I could see the intrigue here. Then it just slowly, you're like, what? It just got away from everything.
I do want to know good soundtrack. I think it's the guy who did Game of Thrones on this. Very good soundtrack for what that's worth. And if we're naming positives here.
And I just want to put this out there to be respectful. I think it's Tandy Wade Newton now. I think that's what she's being credited by. So I'm going to say Tandy Wade Newton. I thought her only character or her character was the only one I really liked in this movie in terms of her portrayal and performance.
But even her character was so like one dimensional. Like, hey, it's, you know, I'm finding my solutions in the bottom of a bottle. Like she said that same line like 10 times throughout this movie. And like, I think she was the most badass and like gave the only levels of like characterization to the character of, was it Nick that we had, which by the way, Nick Bannister is a terrible name. You can't name the last name Bannister is just a terrible Miami detective.
Nick ex-vet window guy. Pane.
Yeah. Right. That's what I'm saying. Like, that's just a horrible item to pick as a last name.
But her character, like just in terms of, you know, her drinking problem, her whole character fit in most with the genre, I thought. Like in her dialogue in the memory with Rebecca Ferguson's character was like probably the most enjoyable conversation between any two individuals in this particular film. So I really liked her character more than anybody's. And then I didn't hate Rebecca Ferguson's character. I thought that was so caught up in like the genre. And then, you know, just what you think of like a noir movie where you have the silhouette of, you know, the lady in the red dress and the door of the detective agency, like her coming in and saying she lost her keys. Like, I kind of like that because that's what you expect out of the genre. But then you get into the whole, like, what you didn't really care about is like, they had 5 minutes of an on-screen relationship. And then he woke up from the chamber and he's like, I got to go back in the chamber to get more relationship. And what he was just, he was just addicted to e-girl.
Yeah, he's kind of like what's his name, K in Blade Runner, although I would do that too if I was him.
What is the worst Hugh Jackman role? What would you put up there as like his and I'm not movie, because like for example, like X-Men Origins Wolverine, not a good movie, but like Hugh Jackman wasn't the problem with that movie. But in terms of like where you've watched, you've been like, man, Jackman, not great in this one. Like, I can't think of many.
Like, even the Rock'em Sock'em Robots movie, he was very
new. Yeah, that was an awesome movie.
Like, and that's, I mean,
Real Steel.
Movie 43, maybe.
Yeah, but that's not a real movie. Like that was basically where they had blackmail material on everyone involved. And they're like, the Fairley brothers, like, you gotta do this.
He was pretty good in Chappie. He wasn't the problem with Chappie. Chappie was the problem with Chappie.
I don't remember ever watching something and saying somebody else would be better than Hugh Jackman in this. But like even
Pan?
I was watching this and I was like, Thomas Jane would fit in more in this role than Hugh Jackman, I think.
Yeah. Ooh, Swordfish. He was good in Swordfish, though.
The Front Runner was a kind of boring movie that came out a couple years ago, but he wasn't bad in it. Like, I this is the first time I like can truly remember watching a Hugh Jackman movie. And again, he wasn't terrible and going, man, he didn't have it here. Like he just didn't have his fastball today. Like it just didn't work out. He probably should have pitched like 3 innings in this movie. Like he just didn't have.
And I just wonder, like, was it just, I don't think it was him, but like, you know, maybe the direction was there. I just don't know. He just wasn't miserable enough for me. It's almost like you could have combined him and the Watts character into one. Like, and I know you had to have that. And by the way, like I'm an idiot, but was it implied that the Watts character was in love with him? Was that the implication there in terms of her like withholding the information, or am I just like thinking about it too much?
I don't know. I didn't really think about it that way. The, what do you call it? I'm trying to think of like other ways they could have done this a little bit better. And I think that the noir characterization to these characters, like you were saying before, I think they felt like they were half in, half out on that. Like they tried to make them relatable characters, but then they also had moments where they would be very like heavy handed with that. You know what I mean? Like the Clifton Collins I'm probably saying his name wrong. The bad guy in this with the burned face, like that guy was so hammy and over the top. The St. Lou or St. Joseph guy, whatever his name was, he was so over the top. And like, but then other times Hugh Jackman as Nick was very grounded, and Watts very grounded, Rebecca Ferguson very grounded. Like they were a little bit in and out of that, and they maybe if they dedicated 100% into the one direction, it would have been better.
Oh, I'll take that back. You know who the best person in this movie was? I thought Tandy Wynn Newton was very great, but Daniel Wu, his St. Joe character.
That's what I was just saying. Yeah.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. Like that was the most intriguing part of the movie, I thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I see. Like but he hammed it up, is what I'm saying.
Yep. I agree I think you're onto something. I think everybody just needed to ham it up a little more. Maybe
if they were 100% ham, full 100% ham mode, this would have been a much, much better movie. They'll release the ham cut of Reminiscence and you might like it more.
But the movie just completely fell off the interesting radar for me when you got into the Sylvan storyline with his widow and his son. And like, you know, I did like kind of the clock shop scene where, you know, it kind of just illustrates the world everyone's living in. But the whole reveal around the sun did nothing for me. And what I was going to say earlier is you can't help but think if they got an actor like Skylar Gisondo to play the sun, if it would have been better.
Yeah. I don't know. It just, I think at the end of the day, the thing about Reminiscence is that it makes me want to watch other movies that I feel like it borrowed from. Like I wanted to go watch Inception instead of thinking about this anymore.
That's an issue. Like that's always you never want that to happen where it's like, oh, it reminds me of this, just a significantly shittier version. Like if your first instinct is to turn it off and to watch something else, like it doesn't get much worse than that. I mean, again, the concept here was fine. Like the concept here was intriguing actually. But it's just executed in a worse way compared to other things related to it. And that's just tough. And again, the acting not good enough to overcome the fact that longer movie, kind of boring in spots, nothing overly intriguing. So
yeah, I mean the whole thought of like where do you go when the future sucks is it's definitely something worth exploring. So I thought the movie was onto something there. It just was the main storyline wasn't good. I didn't like it. You know, I don't know. You're right. They had, you know, there was something there. I don't think it was horrible. I enjoyed parts of it. It wasn't a complete write-off to me, but you couldn't help but wonder if it could have been executed a little bit better or had a better story to it or characters that you cared about more.
Yeah. I want to see Hugh Jackman make more musicals, I guess. That's clearly what he wants to do. Let him do it.
No, we should just trap him into playing Wolverine for the rest of his life. It's like
a lifetime contract with Earth. He just has to play Wolverine until he dies.
Well, it's like the end of the movie where he just spends the rest of his life in the Matrix pod having memories.
Yeah,
it'd be exactly like that, except blanked. Now you're playing Wolverine.
That's what this movie is. It's his, like his love letter to wanting to leave, like having to play Wolverine in the same characters.
I think what this movie is an extension of the Dad Boat universe. This is set in the same world as Serenity, but in the future, in my mind.
And there is a boat, so you're onto something there.
I can get on that plane with you. I can get on that same wavelength with you. Next episode, I don't know what we're going to do, but there's a couple options. So The Night House is a new movie that came out, but it is in theaters. Tougher access, I imagine, but apparently really good. I'm excited to see it. There's that Jason Momoa movie, Sweet Girl, on Netflix.
That stinks. It's real bad.
Yeah, it's bad. It's a bad movie. Because we only have
He plays a 63-year-old guy commenting on like other Facebook posts. And he just says like "sweet girl." It's a real creepy comment.
Oh god,
that's what "sweet girl" reminds me of. Like some dude just like
commenting.
We could do a throwback. So we only have 1, 2, 3, 4 more episodes with you on, Trill. We have Shang-Chi in the last week, the last one. We have Candyman. So we have an open slot.
Maybe Trill's choice.
So maybe you just pick.
The emoji movie. Let's just bring it full circle. Just 45 minutes.
You
know what?
We'll
do that.
We'll let you pick a movie on streaming, older movie, something. Yeah.
Okay. That sounds good. I like that.
It's a fun task. All right, let's do our draft here to wrap things up. The coolest dudes draft. Because maybe Hugh Jackman will be on here. I think he's a worthy pick. He's a cool dude. I'm up first, then Trill, then Ken Jack, then the audience.
No audience this time. It's just okay. Us.
Good. Good. Fuck them.
Fuck those guys. They're not taking any of our dude picks.
Yeah, we want our best dude. We get the best dudes, just us.
Exactly. We're not letting them dilute our picks.
My number one pick, I think he's the coolest dude. He can do whatever he wants. Car commercials, acting, good-looking guy. Tosses on weight for weird movies, takes it all off. Did the beach bum, plays the drums at Major League Soccer games. He's like the minister of defense or whatever for Texas, like basketball and football. It's like the minister of morale or some shit. I forget what it is. Matthew McConaughey.
Doesn't he teach an acting course at University of Texas? Yeah.
He's definitely not the minister of defense at University of Texas, but he's something like that. He's like the minister of culture at Texas. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, Matt, he's the minister of culture. And the MLS, they were like, he's the part owner. He's like, I'm going to play the drums. Like, okay, sure. Oscar winner. Matthew McConaughey, I think, is as cool as it gets. Like, he is the epitome of cool. A cool dude.
He was going to be the number one no matter who was going first.
Yeah, so I'm taking Matthew number one. Trill, number one pick for you.
Number one pick for me is Miles Davis.
Damn it.
Miles Davis is the coolest dude of all time. I'm sorry.
It's literally the joke from, what was the movie?
Billy Madison.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pissing your pants is cool, then I'm Miles Davis. I may have butchered that, but that's the way I remember it. One of the greatest musicians of all time, but also one of the coolest dudes of all time. And, you know, the pictures of him and, you know, the way he dresses and everything like that. I mean, just incredible. And that goes without even like examining his musical talent. That just adds another, you know, 5 levels onto it.
Does it's great. Pick.
Miles Davis, number one for you. Ken, you have back-to-back picks.
All right. I'll pick a guy who was the coolest dude for a very long time. Still alive, so still very cool. I'll pick Harrison Ford. Harrison Ford is
an
unbelievably cool guy. From being two of the coolest characters in Indiana Jones, Harrison Ford and Han Solo. Beyond that, like you watch the interviews now. One of the best interview moments of all time was, did Greedo shoot first? I don't care. This is one of the coolest things.
I don't care.
That's cooler than when Leia said, I love you. And he said, I know, which is also one of the coolest moments in cinematic history. And obviously he has a much bigger career with many other great movies beyond those two.
I have to play the clip because it's just, there's just something about the clip that I just have to play.
I don't care.
I don't care.
It's just, it's.
What if he was in Reminiscence and he was the lead actor and he's like, time is like a.
You shoot Greedo first or did Greedo shoot you first?
I don't care.
You just tell me that's not the coolest thing. He's so fucking cool.
Because honestly, because it's not that he said he didn't. It's not the I don't care. It's the I don't care. Like there's just, it's the pause. It's
yeah.
There's just like a disgusted pause with the questions.
And like
I don't care.
It's so genuine with so many other actors. Like you could tell, like they're coached to answer XYZ to whatever. Like he genuinely does not give a shit at all. And he's been asked that probably a trillion times, despite like over the years and years and years. So, you know, I just, he's so fucking cool. I can't help it. For my next pick, I think I'll do Brad Pitt. Brad Pitt also incredibly cool. And I think he's been cool for 30 plus years now. roughly, like right around, like his career being like what, 90, early 90s, all the way through to today, and he's still just as cool now as he was when he was young and all tight and hip. So, you know, just he's an extremely cool dude. Got to pick him.
He has a Harrison Ford effect as well, just continuously cool the older he gets. Just
yeah,
looks the same amount of cool the whole time. Trill, yeah, number two for you, coolest dudes.
Yeah, number two for me is Michael Caine, specifically Michael Caine in the 60s, because Michael Caine cool in the 60s had, you know, cool dude, cool accent, cool actor, but just going off of his like fashion, his fits in the 60s with the glasses and the turtlenecks and the wide lapels, the double-breasted suit jackets. God, like that's the way that, you know, and it was like fitting that he was in Austin Powers, because I feel like so much of that character was just based off of Michael Caine.
Yeah. I forgot how funny he was in Austin Powers.
Michael Caine, number two for you. I'm gonna stick with British as well. I'm going Idris Elba.
Yeah, damn.
He's a man. If you told me he graces the cover of GQ every week, I would say, maybe GQ's monthly. I would say, okay, I believe that. Like he's just that cool. And like it, honestly, like there has to be a rule. Like if you're consistently said to be the next James Bond, you're probably pretty cool. Like you could probably pick a lot of Bond actors for this. You could pick many Bond actors for this. Elba falls in that. The first pick of the third round, my next pick, I'm going to pick, I think, is the coolest athlete of all time, Usain Bolt. Majorly cool dude. Just first of all, to have a name like that and just be the best in the world, the thing that is most associated with your name, just being lightning fast, that's just badass. And he won gold medals and his diet was McNuggets. Like that's cool. Like people are like, they're doing pre-workout and they're chugging their protein shakes and eating their power bars, which is what I'm sure they do at the Olympic Village, eating their kale. And he's just dunking chicken McNuggets in sweet and sour sauce. And then Nate goes out the next day and he's just the fastest guy in the world.
Yeah.
Undeniably cool.
And just fun. He's just amazing to watch. Like, yeah, you're right.
Yeah. There's just a swagger. One of the more unforgotten things about him is that he showboated the last 10 meters when he won in Beijing his first gold medal.
I was like that. Like I know there's a contingent of, you know, there's a lot of, people want athletes to be like have a lot of humility sometimes, but I think there's a different, like I think humility combined with like showboating is definitely possible. Like, and I want my athletes to like enjoy their supernatural powers basically and have fun with them. And whenever you have an athlete who does that, it's like it's super cool, because you know, you just don't want them to feel like they have to be like they can't have a personality.
Yeah, exactly. Show it off. Trill, your third pick.
My third pick is Lenny Kravitz. Let me tell you why. If I got up on the stage in leather pants and did a squat and my pants ripped in the middle and my dick fell out, my life would be over. I would have to retreat to a cabin. I'd be so embarrassed. For Lenny Kravitz, he didn't give a shit.
It's Lenny Kravitz. Ballpark.
He's one of the coolest dudes in my lifetime. I like his music a lot, but he also, you know, has a lot of iconic looks. Like his big scarf became a meme, but that looked cool. He made that look cool. The reason it became a meme is because only he could make that look cool. And he also was great in the Hunger Games.
He was. People forget. He was like probably one of the better small parts in the Hunger Games.
What was his name? It was
like Benholio Gates or something stupid, I'm sure.
It wasn't
even close.
They all had dumb names.
It was something with like an F or something. It was like not Finn. Finnick Shand is a Star Wars character. Oh, that makes me so mad.
It's going to be something equally dumb, and you guys laughing at me, it's going to look stupid.
No, because yours isn't even close.
I wasn't trying to be Senna. Close. I just said a
it was
dumb
Senna.
Name.
Senna. You're just Senna.
All right. It's still
I thought he had a different name than that. I'm thinking of Haymitch.
And I also really like his relationship with Jason Momoa, who is now married to Lisa Bonet, his ex-wife, and they maintain a good relationship. And I think that's a real dude's rock moment.
I also, what's the one thing you think? What's the non-music thing? Well, there is music involved. What's the the non like song or performance you think of with Lenny Kravitz? What's the one thing that comes to your mind?
The non song performance?
It's just his nuts coming out like Troll was saying, but that's it.
I don't always associate him with that. It was like a Gap commercial he was in, or Old Navy. He was in it for years.
I don't know. I'm not familiar.
You just Lenny Kravitz Gap. I think it was Gap.
He doesn't seem like a Gap guy either. That's very not cool, actually.
It was a Gap commercial with Sarah Jessica Parker.
Yes.
That is significantly even less cool. This is getting less. He's getting less cool by the second here, Tro.
No, dude. There's no. Lenny Kravitz elevates everything he's in. I'm sorry. He carried that Gap commercial. Sarah Jessica Parker's fine. It's fine. So what if I had to Google it?
Him partying on a Gap commercial with Sarah Jessica Parker wearing low-rise jeans is not cool. She's wearing a fedora, too, and a tucked-in scarf that comes out from underneath her blouse. This is the least cool thing I've ever seen, Trill. This is very... I don't disagree with your pick at all. I think Lenny Kravitz is incredibly cool, but this particular moment is one of the least cool things I've ever seen.
I don't know. Look, say what you want about your whole feeling about Sarah Jessica Parker, but like at the time when Sex of the City was the height, like it was huge. It was like Gap was just tapping into that.
Yeah, but she's not cool. Regardless of Sex of the City's,
I think she's kind of cool.
Come on. Sarah Jessica Parker's not cool.
And that's Lenny Kravitz is cool. No, Lenny Kravitz is cool.
Yeah, I'm
sticking to my main argument. I'm not going to go off into tangents. I'm sorry. He had to
carry
that commercial by being so fucking cool. But he also got that bag, which is cool too. And you're right. He probably showed up to that Gap commercial, and he's wearing like, you know, Rick Owens or something like that. Like not even Gap. He's like, I'm not going to wear that.
Mm-hmm. No.
They just stitched the Old Navy into the jean.
Kenjack, back-to-back picks.
All right. First, I will do someone who I think is incredibly cool. So there's two people I could pick here. One is Steve McQueen, who is literally, his nickname was the King of Cool. But I'll pick Burt Reynolds because I think he resonates more with people than Steve McQueen does, unfortunately. Not to say... That's a bad thing, but like I think Steve McQueen is incredibly cool. I just think Burt Reynolds has more notoriety. So I'll pick Burt Reynolds first. But what do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, Burt, wait, are you gonna pick both of them?
No, just Burt Reynolds.
Yeah, I mean, Burt Reynolds is undeniably cool. Like every photo of Burt Reynolds, very cool.
And Steve McQueen, definitely cool. But I think it's also like if you're in your 60s now, like you'd pick Steve McQueen because you lived through it. Whereas like Burt Reynolds, like I lived through part of Burt Reynolds' coolness.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Just him with the hat. It just like that. Spooky, you know the picture.
Yeah, extremely cool dude.
But Burt Reynolds, they both had cool cars. Is the thing.
They did.
Steve McQueen had his Bullet Mustang, and then Burt Reynolds had the
GT. No.
In multiple just of
the,
them.
The Smokey and the Bandit photo of him looking out the side of the car, like that is again undeniably one of the coolest photos ever taken.
Super cool. And for my next pick, I'm gonna leave Steve McQueen behind. I'll just pick Bruce Lee because I think Bruce Lee was one of the coolest guys in the world before he passed. Yeah, not even just like for being a martial artist and movie star and all that, but like his fashion sense impeccable. Talking about Lenny Kravitz, like if you just look up like Bruce Lee fashion. You'd be shocked by how well he dressed. Like, cause he's just an absolute fucking stud. And like everyone wanted to be Bruce Lee in like that period of the '70s, and he inspired a lot of people that came after him. And I think he was just generally speaking, a very cool dude that has a lot of very cool, like urban myth and real stories about him. So I got to pick him.
That is interesting. You bring that up because I feel like what's like, when you think of Bruce Lee in your head, what do you think of? You think of him with no shirt on.
True. Or the jumpsuit.
Yeah. Yes. Well, yeah. A lot of good fashion. Trill, your fourth pick.
My fourth pick is Tony Hawk.
Damn. Yeah.
Okay. Like, Tony Hawk's an attractive guy, but a taller, gangly guy isn't supposed to be cool, but he is. Like, you know, you think of like Steven Merchant, right? Like, he's made a whole career off of not being cool. Whereas Tony Hawk, like, Tony Hawk just has an optimistic personality. He seems like a guy you would get along with. He seems like a very chill dude. By all accounts, all public interactions with Tony Hawk have been very very nice. Tony Hawk has become a cool dude from being a good dude. And that's why I've selected Tony Hawk. And some of the best games of all time have his name on them. And he developed them all himself. He was there programming these games.
He learned C++ just to do it.
He did. Not many people know that. And he also recorded all the music for it. Even though they said they were by other bands, Tony Hawk did it all.
He took none of the credit. That's why he's so cool. He gave the credit to other people.
Exactly.
My last two picks, I'm going to go. I did mention a Bond. My last two no longer with us. Rest in peace, Sean Connery, number four. I mean, he is James Bond. The voice, like the swagger, even in the bad movies, he's cool. Even in League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, he was cool. Terrible movie.
The coolest character in that for sure.
Oh, yeah. No, he didn't even.
Alan Quatermain.
Yeah. Alan Quatermain. Yeah, Sean Connery, very cool. And then Prince. Last pick. True. I mean, Prince is. Your level of coolness can definitely be measured if you're somebody who can do literally anything and people go, wow, that looks awesome. Like he, like, again, that's another one, low effort, no effort. It would still be cool and it would still be awesome. And I'll mention the moment for Trill, him playing the guitar in the rain at the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm. Yes. The silhouette. But also like his ability, you know, writing songs for other people. Like he was that great of a songwriter. Where he just gave his songs to other people. And it's like, you play it. And like, I think Manic Monday by the Bangles was like, he wrote that song. Like he was just all around talented, like songwriter, musician, performer. I don't think there'll never be anyone quite like Prince.
Yeah, easy. Steal in the fifth round. Trill, your last pick. You had Tony Hawk in the last round.
Yeah, my last pick is probably my most favorite athlete growing up. I got to put him on this list. Let me tell you, I'm leaving off some musicians, but George Kenneth Griffey Jr.
Yeah.
Great. Backwards hat, man.
You know, becoming a fan of baseball in like 1989 and you know, seeing his swing, which is the best looking swing of all time, or one of them, in my opinion, but also just, you know, his approach to the game and like him out, like, you know, making those catches on the warning track and then him taking BP with the backwards hat. Like he just really cool. I loved him. And I pulled a Upper Deck 1989 Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card out of a pack from a card shop when I was like five. And I had my dad with me. And it's still one of the most memorable moments of my life. I don't know why I specified I had my dad with me. I didn't go to a card shop by myself when I was five. But I remember him being, you know, it was, you know, when you're with your parents, you remember that it was a moment you shared together. And I, you know, always think about when you think about your childhood and athletes and, you know, Ken Griffey Jr. was just always so cool to me. Still is. Especially in the movie we watched.
Yeah.
I wish he would have had the backwards hat on his plaque at the Hall of Fame.
Yep.
I really wish they would have allowed that. I really wish, like he is, he's probably the coolest baseball player of all time. Again, it's the backwards hat. Him just hitting BP in a backwards hat, home run derby. Yeah, cool as it gets. Ken Jack, finish it up.
My last pick, I'm going to pick another king of cool. The big Joe Camel. Joe Camel, arguably the coolest person slash anamorphic animal that's ever lived. And I just sent a bunch of pictures in the chat to you guys. I mean, every picture, he's like playing piano in a white tux. He's leaning on a yellow Ferrari with a beautiful dame leaning on it too. He's on a red Corvette. He's wearing like, he's doing that cool guy thing where like you're wearing a t-shirt and you put the pack of cigarettes in the sleeve of the arm. That's so fucking cool. He's like a fighter pilot. He's got a big ass.
He's like cool. He was so cool. The government had to step in and say, you can't be this cool.
You can't be this cool. That's exactly. There needed to be government binding resolution to stop Joe Camel from being that cool. That's how cool Joe Camel was.
I remember being at a gas station in 1989 with my dad and just picking out a Joe Camel from a pack of cigarettes and smoking it. I'll never forget that.
Those are the days. True father-son bonding right there.
I'll tell you what, flipping through magazines was never the same after they removed those advertisements.
Yeah, because they were obviously, like, you go back And you're just like, this was very much created to appeal to a younger audience to encourage them to smoke.
Well, yeah, I would love to smoke if I saw these ads when I was little. You know why? Because Joe Camel is so cool.
Significantly better than the Marlboro Man. Way better.
Way better. Way better.
They should bring Joe Camel back, but he should like pitch a different product.
Like something healthier? Like
Pop-Tarts.
No, it has to be something like it has to be something else cool. Like have them sell cars. Half these ads, he's in front of a cool car anyway. Imagine like a new Volkswagen or new Audi commercial, and she's like, "Hey, you should buy the new."
That sounds like another great idea in the long line of Trill Ballin's board meeting pitches. Okay, guys, I know kids aren't eating Pop-Tarts anymore. I got an idea.
Kellogg's stock cigarette price has dropped Camel 15% after their introduction of Joe Camel into their latest advertising campaign. the worst decision in business history, many are calling it.
Joe Camel eating Pop-Tarts. I used to smoke cigarettes. Now I eat Pop-Tarts.
Same rush.
That's it. That's it. That's all. No more. Anything else?
I don't think so.
No, I'm so sick. I just can't wait to fucking. I'm gonna go shower right after this and just clear out all the phlegm from my nose, which I think you guys can probably hear from here. It's disgusting. It's absolutely vile. I can't wait to get rid of it.
You should get one of those shower drops. Those big shower drops. Oh, those are nice,
dude. It's awesome. It was so good. I did that earlier.
I'm good, Jeff. You want me to say the thing?
You say the thing first. You're gonna pick the movie. We'll talk to you next time.
Have a good week at the box office, folks.